Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
Now, when the movie Scarface was first released, some Cuban Americans objected to the depiction of criminality within their community. Yet from the 1960s to the end of the last century and perhaps beyond, there was a Cuban mob. TJ English is the author of The Corporation, an epic story of the Cuban American underworld. TJ, good afternoon to you.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. The people who were involved in the mob in the United States, had they been involved in organized crime in Cuba before that?
No. In fact, most of these people were people who were affiliated with the previous government in Cuba before Castro took over. They were from the middle classes and in some cases even the upper classes. These were primarily the people who were chased out of Cuba when the revolution took place. They were, by and large, upstanding citizens when they were in Cuba. And it was with a sense of loss and anger and need for revenge that they formed this criminal organization in the United States.
And when you say need for revenge, in what way did they feel that setting up a criminal organization would affect that revenge?
Well, the idea was to destabilize the Cuban government led by Castro and kill Fidel and take back Cuba.
Right.
I mean, mostly they were just a criminal organization that revolved around an activity called Bolita, which is basically the lottery. Before the lottery was legal in the United States, it was illegal, and it was run by organized crime. And Latinos love to bet the number. It's a cultural undertaking for them and has been for generations. So this criminal organization sprung up that controlled this betting of the number on a daily basis, and it was hugely lucrative. It generated millions of dollars on a monthly basis. And a lot of that money was used to fuel what was called the anti-Castro movement, secret covert attempts by Cuban exiles, often in consort with the CIA, to assassinate Fidel Castro and to take back Cuba. This was a dream of a certain element within a generation of Cubans who had been chased off the island by the revolution.
Mm. And the Bolita, was that, at least initially, was that happening just in Florida or around Miami, or did it gradually spread to other parts of the U.S. where Cuban-Americans were living?
Yes, wherever there were Latinos. I mean, it was up and down the East Coast. The corporation really began in New York City area. That's where the money was made. It eventually expanded all the way down the East Coast to Miami. The leader of the organization was a very charismatic, brutal gangster by the name of Jose Miguel Battle. He was called El Padrino, the godfather, and he truly was the godfather, the overseer of this organization. And he had been a veteran of the Bay of Pigs invasion. Mm. In the early 1960s, a group of exiles, close to 2,000, attempted to invade Cuba and take back the island, and that operation was sponsored by the CIA and the Kennedy administration. It was a huge disaster. It ended badly. Castro knew they were coming, and a lot of those soldiers were held in prison in Cuba until the United States could negotiate their release. And those men, including Jose Miguel Battle, really formed the nucleus of this criminal organization, the corporation.
So given that to some extent or another, the corporation's activities were aimed towards ending the rule of Castro, were the authorities in the United States to some extent turning a blind eye to their criminal activities because they knew what the greater aim was?
Yes. Well, part of the power and legend of this organization when it was in power was that they were untouchable because they had CIA connections. I mean, the organization, as I mentioned, was born out of a CIA operation, the Bay of Pigs invasion. And after that, the Cuban exile militants maintained a relationship with the CIA, and they were used by the CIA to do all kinds of dirty political deeds during the period of the Cold War. Cubans were used to do bombings and political assassinations and really a kind of stunning level of secret political activity that took place from the 60s all the way to the end of the century. And they often did this in conjunction with the CIA. So on the street, it was believed that the corporation was untouchable because they had this mystique of having some connection to the CIA. Now, I think mostly that was legend, but the fact is this organization existed for nearly 40 years, and law enforcement had a hard time bringing it down, although they eventually did bring it down. But there may be some truth to the fact that they were protected by their connections to the CIA.
Mm. And those activities, those bombings, etc., were they just aimed towards Cuba, or are we talking about other parts of the world as well?
Other parts of the world. The United States government became concerned that Castroism was spreading around the world, particularly in South America, Latin America. And so the Cold War became a proxy war with the United States becoming involved in all sorts of political activity in South America, in Latin America, in the belief that they needed to stop communism. And this affected political campaigns in El Salvador, Nicaragua, and places like this where covert wars and dirty wars were undertaken to destabilize what was believed to be the spreading of communism around Latin America. So Cubans who were trained, who had been trained for the Bay of Pigs invasion, highly trained covert operators, were used to do these kind of dirty political activities to affect the politics of a number of countries in South America.
Mm. Now, it started, as you say, with the Bolita. What other criminal activities did it expand out into?
Well, pretty much everything. By the time that this organization had moved from New Jersey, New York, down to Miami in the 1980s, it happened to coincide with the explosion of the cocaine business in Miami, the whole cocaine cowboy era of the 80s and 90s. So Jose Miguel Battle, who initially had seen himself as sort of an old world gangster, he partnered with the mafia, with the traditional Italian mafia. He tried to stay away from cocaine, which at that time was controlled mostly by the Colombians. And it was cocaine, of course, was an incredibly violent business where Bolita was not seen to be as violent. And cocaine would bring down a level of heat from law enforcement that Battle was concerned about. So he tried to keep it at arm's length. But the profits were so incredible from the cocaine business. And really, in the 1980s, it was impossible to be a professional criminal operating in Miami and not be involved in the cocaine business. So they did become involved in cocaine. And also, most notably, this organization became incredibly violent, and a lot of the violence turned internally. And Battle, you could say, lost his mind and his soul throughout the course of this story and started to exact revenge against members within his own organization that he felt had betrayed him. And the level of violence in this story is truly shocking and off the charts.
Mm. I suppose that bit of it is a bit like Scarface. Did the Cuban groups ever find themselves in conflict with, say, the Italian mafia or any other groups?
Well, Jose Miguel Battle was very smart about that, and he formed alliances early on in the development of the corporation with the Italian mafia in New York, the five families of New York. He was very good. Battle himself was an ex-Havana cop. Back in the 50s, before he went into exile, he had been a police officer in Havana, and he had met a lot of the mafia figures, the American underworld figures, Meyer Lansky, Santo Traficante, who were prominent in Havana in the 1950s. And so when he came to the United States, he utilized a lot of these relationships, and he covered all bases, and he made payments to whoever he needed to make payments to and made sure everyone got a piece of the pie. And he was very good at corrupting the system, and he was very good at taking care of whoever needed to be taken care of. So, no, he was in full partnership with the Italian mafia. They understood that Latinos love to bet the number. They like to bet the number within their own community from people that they know. So they were glad to allow the Cuban godfather to organize and structure this highly profitable business as long as they were getting a piece of it. And they were, and it was very profitable for them until an incident in the 1980s where there was a violation of protocol and the Italians and the Cubans went to war. And it was a very bloody war. It was mostly an arson war. They started burning down each other's betting locations. The place where bets are made in this bolita business is just the corner deli, the corner bodega, or a auto garage in the neighborhood, or some anonymous shop that exists in the neighborhood. That's where people would go to bet. Of course, there were no signs or anything because this was technically an illegal business. But everybody bet the number. Little old ladies bet the number. The corner priests bet the number. Off-duty cops bet the number. It was a very common activity, although it was illegal, and it was, as I keep saying over and over again, hugely profitable for the for the gangsters who were in control of it.
When it was when the corporation finally collapsed, did it collapse in the inside out, or did law enforcement finally get the better of them?
Eventually, you could say that it was a victim of its own success. It became, over the decades, it became so massive in structure. I mean, the corporation was controlling all these little, from the ground level, from the deli on the corner, the grocery store where you'd go place your bet, the thousands of these little shops that existed in the New York area and in Miami. The corporation controlled all these pennies and dimes and dollars that were coming in to this operation on a daily basis, and it existed for decades and became really a massive, it became institutionalized in a way. And then it started to splinter. It started to form splinter groups that weren't maybe happy with the overall arrangement and wanted to create an organization of their own within the organization. And so Battle had a hard time maintaining control of all of this, and an internal war did begin. But there was one very diligent cop who I should mention, David Shanks, who's many ways sort of the hero of the book, who set his sights on this organization early in his law enforcement career and really stuck with it and spent close to 20 years, building an investigation against the corporation and eventually bringing them down in a massive racketeering case. But as I said, it took 40 years, and by the time this organization was brought down in the 2000s, Jose Miguel Battle was an old man in his 70s. He had a long criminal career that, for some reason, he was able to stay, free and out on the street and commit his criminal activity. And again, a lot of people believe this was in some way because of his CIA connections.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating story. And TJ, thank you very much for speaking with us today. TJ English is the author of The Corporation, an epic story of the Cuban-American underworld. And as I understand, the film rights have already been sold.